Welcome.
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 You're listening to Built by Us.
Built by Us.
Built by Us.
Built by Us.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to a brand new episode of Built by Us. And happy Black History Month. It's Alyssa and Taylor here, of course. And we are super excited to welcome you back to a very special episode of Built by Us today, because it's February. And while we know that Black history is made every single day as part of our celebration of Black History Month and our organization's commitment to equity, we have a really special episode for y'all today. And it actually features some of our fave DemNC staff members.
Yes, Alyssa, we are so excited to be here today with two of our favorite staff members. First, I'd love to welcome Kamaria E. Lawrence. She is our regional managing organizer of the Western Piedmont region. So that's Charlotte and the surrounding areas. My office bestie, Kamaria, it's so great for you to be here.
It's great to be here, Taylor. Thank you for inviting me to participate today.
Of course. And we also have Marcus Thompson, the lead regional managing organizer of the East. So that's Greenville, Winterville, New Bern, Rocky Mount, all those places, very widespread. It's amazing to have you here as well, Marcus.
It's amazing to be here too. I'm so happy to be here. I love this podcast.
And we love you. If our listeners don't remember, both Kamaria and Marquez have both been on the podcast before. You might remember Kamaria from our Juneteenth episode, one of our most ever listened to episodes on the podcast. And you might remember Marquez from our Mutual Aid podcast with London Newton, another one of our 2021 best episodes. So excited to have them back on the show.
Yeah, it's good to be like part of the best, man. I didn't know that. Okay. Winning team here. Like, this is like our own little all-star team, Kamaria. Okay.
Isn't it like all-star season right now? Is that topical?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, they're choosing the people. They're going to play the game soon. So,
basketball country. Let's get it.
Sorry. So, to get us, you know, started off or grounded in the month itself, would anyone like to share some historical context or background on Black History Month before we begin?
Sure, Taylor. Well, Black History Month first began as Black History Week. It was created by Carter G. Woodson. He was an amazing person. So much Black history. And Black History Month is an annual observance originating in the United States, where it's also known as African American History Month. I still call it Black History Month. But it has received an official recognition from the government in the United States and Canada. And more recently has been observed in Ireland and the UK. But it's always, it began as a way of remembering important people and events in the history of the African diaspora. And it's just important that we know what, you know, where it came from. Carter G. Woodson, he is the father or originator of Black History Month. And it first began as Black History Week. But I believe that Marquez has some more information about the shortest month of the year.
I just want to say, anytime I'm anywhere where someone uses the term the diaspora, I feel like, okay, I'm where I'm supposed to be. Like, I'm among the best of the best. So I appreciate that, Kamaria. But you know, one thing, so you talked about how it's based upon Lincoln's birthday and Frederick Douglass's, his birthday was the one. Those two birthdays were right there in February. And so that's why they picked Black History Week. It was around those two birthdays. And then it got expanded for all of February. So one thing that like you often hear people say is like they picked this, you know, the shortest month of the year for Black History Month. And it's understandable that people feel that way, but it just shows that we didn't know the history of it. And so it's not a lack, it's an expansion. Really, it started as a week and now it's a whole month. And it's because of the birthdays of these two people. So, I mean, we could pick other birthdays. We could center it around MLK's birthday or maybe President Obama, you know. So if we were going to do that, you know, have a different month. But I just think that I hate it when we derive something or like we say, you know, something is bad because we don't understand like where it came from. It's not bad. It's not bad that it's the shortest month of the year. And another thing that I think about the context of Black history is you know, we say Black History Month and it kind of puts a box around Black history. But what we're really doing when we talk about this subject, we're talking about history, period. And usually what happens is that Black history is excluded from our history, period. And so then we get a chance now to make up for that. We get a chance to add stuff to our record of history, to our understanding of history. But it's all just history. And so we we appreciate this time period. And that's why I'm not offended by the short month or whatever, because really we're always working to you know, Black history is happening every day, because history is happening every day. And we're always working to get the record straight on what happened in our history. And so that's why I even say this part about where it came from. It's part of getting the record straight when we say it wasn't to, you know, to the detriment of Black people that February was picked. And so I really would want to make that far and wide known that, you know, because there's so much that we feel like as Black people sometimes has come against us. But Black History Month is not one of those things. And I don't want it to be another one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, y'all did this, you know, trying to hurt us. No, this was an expansion of something to celebrate us. And so I really want that record to be cleared up.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Marcus, because you mentioning that so many important things did happen in February, because there were other notable things that also happened in February that I believe some of them may have happened after, you know, February was chosen. And I think Kamari has some other examples of things that happened in February as well. But I think some of the ones that are notable is that the NAACP was formed in 1909 in February. And the first day of the Woolworth sit-ins in Greensboro also happened in February. They started on February 1st, and then they continued on for the for at least the whole month, possibly longer. I actually don't want to misspeak there. But yeah, so you're right. A lot of things that happened in February.
So yeah, right. So it's this just happens to be an important month for this work. And another thing I want to think about is like right along. So as we talk about clearing the record of history, this is something that I'm always trying to say when I do these speeches, because sometimes there's this narrative of like, you know, good Black people, bad white people. And we'll talk about perhaps critical race theory and all this kind of stuff and the fear that people have. But when we talk about Black History Month and the things that have happened in Black history, again, we're just talking about history. And what you really find is that there were racist people or people that were doing bad things to Black people, and just people. There were people doing bad things. And then there were people, white and Black, that were doing good things. And that's all part of this history too. So I'm always trying to get us out of this, you know, this narrative of, you know, when we celebrate Black History Month, somehow that's against white people. No, white people were a part of this too. And so we all made history, like just like America has some good parts of its history and some bad parts of its history. And, you know, Black people were in both chambers of that and white people too. So we're trying to get the record straight. We're trying to get Black history back into the record of history and all the good things that were happening. And that's not against any other people. So like, you know, people, yeah, you actually hear people say stuff like, you know, well, what about White History Month? Joker, that's every other month. Like, just, I mean, what are we talking about? But it's just because people have this idea of if it's about them, then it's not about us. And history is about all of us. We all play our role. And so when we get the history straight, we all understand ourselves better and how we got where we are.
Yes, Marcus, thank you so much for highlighting that important information. But yes, and also it's important that people know that we're recording this today on Rosa Parks' birthday, who is often known as the mother of Black history and mother of civil rights. So this is exciting. But President Gerald Ford officially recognized Black History Month in 1976, calling upon the public to seize the opportunity to honor the too often neglected accomplishments of Black Americans in every area throughout our history. But I am just, you know, it's important to share this information. There is always something important to acknowledge. I know a lot of cities are doing something to honor Rosa Parks today. There are Black history facts in every city. I know I have Black history in my own family. It's history to us, but it's just exciting. It really is. And it's always a reason to celebrate.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because both you and Marcus brought important points that so much of Black history is seen as trauma, right? And all the things that have been done to Black people in our history in America. But Black History Month is, it's not just trauma. There are so many amazing, incredible things to be highlighting and celebrating. And the fact that Black history is American history, like Marcus said, and to not only be teaching Black history to Black people, it's all of our history. So, and if you want to hear more about Carter G. Woodson and his work as a Harvard historian, please go back and listen to our episode with Ajamu Amiri Dillahunt from about this time last year. He is a scholar as well and talks a little bit about Woodson's work documenting Black history.
Man, that's, I agree with that so much. I know you. So when I first got introduced to Black History Month, or the first time it became important to me or whatever, was just exactly what you were just talking about, Taylor, which was, you know, when I learned that there were like the Black Wall Street, or that there were Black communities that were thriving and then they got attacked or whatever. And of course, you know, the attacking part is still part of trauma, or how, you know, they were, you know, purposefully, you know, in some cases, like communities, you know, were destroyed by you know, housing policy, or by putting a street right through the neighborhood, whatever. But I didn't know how much there was in the past, you know, before certain points, how much there was Black wealth and Black prospering and whatever. And so I learned that on one Black History Month about, you know, like I said, Black Wall Street and some of the other communities that we had. And so before that, I had just thought of, like, you know, when I thought about Black history, I had just thought about like slavery and then freedom and then civil rights movement. And that's all I knew. So I didn't. And I used to wonder, like, well, why is it that we don't have, you know, communities like we see in other, you know, like, you know, Chinatown or whatever, you know, why don't we have these like vibrant communities or whatever? And some of it, I mean, and we, number one, I learned that we do. And then number two, I learned like some of the history of how, you know, how hard it was to do that, and how there were times when there was, attacks on that. But it just helped me to see that, okay, so it's not just, you know, it's not just trauma. There's a lot of success. And through Black history, I learned about, you know, all the inventions that we, that Black people have done. And again, it's only important that it's Black people, because a lot of times that's a race. Like, you know, we might know who, you know, invented these things, but not when a Black person invents it. And so again, getting that record straight, it just helped me to appreciate, okay, you know, we're a part of history, and it's not all bad.
Thanks for sharing that, Marquez. Kamaria, do you remember, you know, what your first introduction to Black History Month was, or when you first learned about it?
Yes, I feel like I've always known about it. I'm sure there were days when I didn't, but I say always because I was born in, my family is from the Charlotte metro area, but after my parents graduated from college, they moved to the left coast, also known as the West Coast, in Seattle. And there's not a lot of Black people there. At least there was not when we lived there. I was born in 1977, and my parents, they were friends and worshiped in a Baptist church in Seattle. And we always, as far as I can remember, we always celebrated it. My name, Kamaria, is Swahili. It means the moon in the Swahili language, which is an African language. A lot of our friends, I won't say all, but a lot of our friends, they name their children a Swahili name as well. But we always celebrated Black history, 365. A lot of my parents, African clothing that they wore, they got when they lived in Seattle. When we moved to Charlotte, back to Charlotte in 1983, then it felt more like Black History Month, just this month. But I do remember having Black history programs at school. I attended and graduated from public schools here in the Charlotte area. And that was exciting for that 1 month. Although in my family and my, I would say our circles, we would celebrate year round, especially at church, because church is a big thing in the Black community. I'm a member of Friendship Missionary Baptist Church. We have amazing windows, faceted windows, that have pictures of our Black history. And it's not just church, our church history is Black history from Africa to today. And it's simply amazing. But check it out sometimes if you're ever in the Charlotte area.
I've been to that. I've been to your church, Kamar, and I don't remember seeing those windows. So now I need to go look at those next time I'm back.
Yes, it was the way that you entered in, and it was nighttime.
That will do it. Marcus, do you have any other memories from your early experiences with Black History Month?
I'm just so jealous of Kamaria. That's all I am. It's like, she's like, I always knew, like, you know, I can hear the doctor now. Just like, it's a girl. And let me tell you about Black History Month. And it's like, man, because I just did not, I didn't have. So, yeah. So, I, you know, of course, I learned about it in school and stuff. And in those days, it was basically just, you know, names of people that you hadn't heard of or whatever, or like, guess who invented, you know, this, a Black person. Yeah, you know, that was what it is. So so that's how it started for me. Like I said, until I got a little bit older and, you know, and I learned that the fact about some of the successes of Black history. But as I, you know, began and became an adult and really started doing organizing and volunteering, that kind of stuff, that's how it became very much more meaningful to me. And I just think about, like, the amazing thing that we are talking about history, which is a subject that most people don't, I guess in general, don't like, or don't, you know, history seems kind of boring itself. And now we're talking about like a small part of history in many people's mind. But when I started volunteering and started, you know, trying to make changes in my community, it was important to know, well, how did this community get this way? You know, how did they? And so history becomes much more important when you're trying to create a future. It's really funny. When you're thinking about the future, it causes you to think about the past and, like, and understand the past, want to understand the past. And so that's how it became more and more salient to me, you know, our history and Black history and making people know about it.
Absolutely. Something that I really appreciated that Kamaria keeps mentioning about her family is, you know, how they really emphasize the importance of celebrating Black history year round, every single day, 365 days a year. And I think that's really important because Black history isn't just what's happened in the past, it's happening every single day. Like Marquez said, like, we have to think about the past in order to put ourselves into the future. And we have to think about our present because it's informing our future as well. And so Black history is still happening every single day. And I think that's just something important to point out as well. But Marquez, you actually touched on something we wanted to talk about. You were sharing, you know, like, as you became an organizer and got more into this work, you started to find more meaning in Black History Month. And we wanted to ask both of you all if or how, you know, your perception of Black History Month has changed over the years. I know you already shared a little bit, Marquez and Kamari. I'm curious to hear your experiences as well.
Yes, well, as an organizer, it first began with me as a child. My late grandfather, James E. Lawrence Sr., he was an organizer for the UFCW through the AFL-CIO union. And he was an organizer for that union, or those unions. He actually participated in the March on Washington with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And seeing the organizing through his church and our church, it's just what I know. And it makes sense to me. When I was in graduate school at Clark Atlanta University, I was hired to be an organizer for the AFL-CIO. And to me, it makes sense. How are you going to get something done if you're not organized, number one? And second of all, it's about community. You have to definitely work together. And I'm sorry for the last landline phone on earth.
It's the last one on earth. So that means it's history. So it's yours. It's Black. So it's part of what we're talking about.
It's relevant.
It's relevant.
But it was just so important when I was in Georgia to learn more about the history and all of the different things that have taken place in the Atlanta metro area of Georgia. But back here home in Charlotte and in North Carolina, it just means so much. And organizing is why things get done, in my opinion. Organizing is essential to getting things done in the community. Organizing is what got us voter rights. Organizing is what gets us laws that make public education available, accessible. It's necessary. And so I use this each day. Just had an amazing meeting last night with our coalition. I was really touched by last night. We had an outstanding attendance and awesome participation. And I'm just grateful that there are people in the community, and we welcome more people to get involved in organizing, because just because you have a right today doesn't mean you'll have it tomorrow. So we want to make sure that we continue to strengthen and remain in contact with our coalition that we're building.
And I appreciate that too, Tavares. I think for me too, like I said, it started as more, as I was saying before, you know, just names and like facts or whatever that you know, that I knew. But as I, you know, got older and really understood the significance of history, period, it has become more and more important. And so I'm part of a lot of organizations now, and we all are trying to, you know, that a lot of the nonprofits that I work with or my partners or whatever, we work in the African American community. So we're always trying to do work around Black History Month. And so it has just become a more integral part of my work and my being. And it's not just facts that, oh, that's interesting to know, you know, that this happened at this time or whatever, but it really informs the story more of like who I am and who we are as a people now, Black History Month. So that's how it has changed for me. It has gone from just, you know, cool facts to know, which again, I you know, staying with the theme of Black history is just history. Like, you know, I ain't care about a lot of history, you know, like, I mean, all of it was just like facts and dates to me. And so it didn't really matter as much. But as I got into this work, all history became more important, because it tells the story of who we are, how we got here, and then where we're going, or how can we change where we're going? You got to understand how we got here to do that. And so that's why Black history has become much more important to me, and telling these stories, understanding the context of, you know, when people were making certain decisions and doing certain things, well, what was the context of that? So it's much, much broader to me now than just facts and dates, like, you know, as it was, you know, in the beginning.
Yeah. Is there anything that y'all do to celebrate the month differently now that you're in this, you know, maybe specifically in the organizing space, or maybe Marcus with your kids?
Yeah. So we definitely, like I said before, it was just information, but now it's something to do. So we've got events that we plan to, like, you know, celebrate, like parties to go to, events, either like, you know, showings and stuff like that. There's a lot of local stuff that happens around Black History Month. So another organization that I work with is called Young Urban Professionals, and we've got a meeting Sunday to talk about what we're going to do for Black History Month, you know, so we're going to have some kind of program or whatever, you know, definitely Democracy NC. So it's a much more, so there's not like one thing that we do to celebrate it, you know, but it's just more than just, you know this information. It's more of a celebration. It's more of a get together, and we do it differently every year. I'm curious if y'all have like more standard stuff, like maybe in the big city, y'all just got like a Black History Bazaar that happens, you know, every, you know, and maybe, and that might be something that we can start to try to develop. Well, so, you know,
Juneteenth, right? That sounds cool.
Yeah. Juneteenth has become a real thing. So we might need to do something this month and make it like a whole thing, you know. Let's make it work.
Yeah, a lot of Black history before COVID, we would have Black history programs in the community. And it would primarily be, you know, my name is Rosa Parks and I was born February 4th and things like that. But there, I think there are so many opportunities for us now that we are in COVID. We primarily have done things online, tons of online programming, movie series to celebrate our history safely at home. But we're going to get out of this one day, people. Keep wearing your mask. But reading and talking and listening to, even if it's with a neighbor who was there before you. I know in the neighborhood I live in, there's historic sites that have been identified, declared as historic sites, which is not too far from our office here, Democracy NC, here in the Western Piedmont region. But we are very close to Johnson C. Smith University. We're in walking distance, maybe a 5-minute walk from Johnson C. Smith. But there's just so much history, but a part of it goes on researching, asking questions and listening to what's going on in the community you live in. Even whether it's sad, it makes you, it's sad news, but you made it through. So it's good news.
I agree. I think it's important to learn the history of not only everywhere, but specifically where you are, to just give more context to the problems that your community might be facing and dealing with. And, you know, Marquez, you kind of touched on, or you kind of mentioned, when you finally understand the importance of history and, you know, that moment of putting it into context and how it really informs your story and who you are. I really like that because I feel like that's a really important experience that a lot of us have while we're learning, as we're students, as we're growing up, just like having that moment where history becomes more than just something you're learning in school. Like you're like, oh, wait, this is not just history. Like this is a part of my history. I can contribute to this. I can be a part of this. This informs my life now. And I feel like that's a really important experience that a lot of us have, understanding what our history means for us. And I know, Kamari, I believe you actually studied African-American history as well. So I know that you also have a value for history as well. And so I want to talk about something that's been going on recently. And that's these potential new rules that we've been seeing arise about critical race theory and, you know, how teachers are being limited on what they can teach in their classrooms, how we're basically trying to further remove Black history even more than it already is from our textbooks. And, you know, I just want to talk about that. How do y'all feel about what's going on? Do you have any thoughts about that, knowing how we all feel about history and knowing how much has impacted our lives?
I think critical race theory, or CRT, I really, really don't like using abbreviations, but critical race theory, I think it's essential. I don't understand how I could be a purposeful human being if I don't know what was here before me, if I don't know what's going on around me. I just don't understand what would be my purpose. I can't just be here. I need to know why things are the way they are. I need to know why there was a Black section or colored section, white only section. I need to know why do we go to church on Sunday? Why? I was that child, like, why? And I just think it's necessary that we ask these questions. I think that people are scared of power. And I think that they feel that if someone learns the truth about our history, then they become more empowered. Well, say if Black people knew what really happened, if America knew what really happened, how it happened, then they would be scared. But also people would be empowered to do more. I know in recent weeks, there was, I believe, a 2-part series on Emmett Till's life and his murder that was on television. And I felt that it was of course, I was not alive during that period, but I felt it was a great depiction of what did take place and pretty realistic. So that was a effort towards critical race theory, showing what really happened, how he possibly really looked when they pulled him out of the river. and his mother, Mamie Till, to show his body in the casket. And she was saying, don't try to, you know, reconstruct his face. Don't try to put makeup to cover up. I want them to see what they did to my child. And that's so important. And I know when I have traveled to DC, my favorite place on earth, to the Smithsonian's museum that spotlights African-American history, and its whole purpose for that particular Smithsonian museum, there is a room there dedicated to Emmett Till, and you walk into the room and you feel drawn back in time. And the whole mood in the room is set up as if you were in the funeral home. There is a casket in that room. Of course, that is his casket, but that's not his body. You're not seeing Emmett Till, but the feeling that is in that space in that museum is just powerful. And I would strongly encourage anyone who hasn't had an opportunity to go to the museum, definitely check it out. It's an amazing museum, but that particular exhibit is just amazing.
Wow, Kamara, you really talked about it. So first of all, I really appreciate the framing of that question, Alyssa, and how you brought that in. That's a great question. And what you said, Kamara, you were talking about it from a different perspective than I normally think about, like the CRT discussion, because you're talking about how it would empower potentially, you know, people of color, or, you know, which is awesome. And like, and even alluding to like how, you know, that thing with Emmett Till, where people want to she wanted people to see the ugliness, to see what had happened, because that was key to change and empowering people, that they see, okay, this is the ugly truth of what occurred. I had often thought about or think about this issue as, or the way it's often brought to me. First of all, it's a big misunderstanding of what it is. Like, critical race theory is like a college level, you know, concept where they basically were saying, when we are going to look at history, we're going to have this thought that we're just going to, that the experiences of Black people and the trauma and the oppression that is part of the Black African-American experience, we're going to take that as we're not going to have to prove that in our discussion. Because a lot of times in discussions, you know, in these high level discussions, you know, if you were to say, well, Black people were oppressed, you would have to give 30 minutes proving that statement. And we're just going to, and in the critical race theory, it's just, okay, we're going to take that for granted, that happened, and that we're not going to have to spend time, you know, talking about the oppression of Black people, that we're going to grant that as true. And so with that being the case, how do we look at these other historical? Okay, so it's all high level stuff. I mean, it's not for like fifth graders or, you know, kindergartners or whatever, but the fear and the from, you know, what I've been hearing is, you know, the concern is that the ugliness of this reality, if it were made present, or if children were to see it, then they would somehow feel ashamed to be white people, or it would make them feel bad about themselves, or it would make them feel bad about their country, or it would, you know. And so a lot of times what happens in debates or these conversations, and of course, they're not happening one-on-one, but people make statements to each other and people don't ask questions. So my question would be to someone, to these, you know, people who are making these laws, is why are you ashamed of our history? If your premise is that if kids see it, then they'll be ashamed to be white, are you ashamed to be white? And why? If you learning this history makes you ashamed to be white, or you feel like it'll make your kids ashamed to be white, then why? What is it that they will be ashamed? Are you ashamed that this happened, or are you ashamed that they know about it? Like, what's the source of the shame, right? And so, and then my question is, if there is reason to be ashamed, is what we're doing now gonna cause more shame or less shame? Is it gonna cause healing? Are we trying to heal? Or are we just trying to hide? Like, so that's my question. So, and that's why I said what I said earlier. When you look at history and this narrative that it would create this narrative that all Black people are somehow, like, you know, saints, and all white people are devils. See, that's not the narrative. That's not the history. And so if you're ashamed of our history, my question would be, like, how do you see yourself in that history? Do you see yourself as someone or currently, because we talk about how we're making history every day. So are you there? If you say there are two sides to this issue, well, what side of the issue are you on? Would you be on the side of Lincoln, or would you be on the side of the Confederates? Now, if you feel like you would be on the side of the Confederates right now, then maybe you should be ashamed. And that's what we need to be talking about. Not the shame of the past, but the shame of right now. You know, and that's, so sometimes we get all this stuff, we talk about the history, whatever. No, history happened. You either acknowledge what happened or not. That would be another question is, well, did this really happen or not? If it happened, then why is it bad to talk about what happened? Now, I know that, you know, we don't talk about everything with two-year-olds, you know, so there are levels to it. But, you know, at appropriate ages, when we're talking about the Civil War or war period, then at the age where you can grasp that, then let's talk about some of the other things that happen. I mean, I would want to understand, why is it that you are afraid to talk about it, or what's the harm in talking about that, and what's the harm in not talking about them is a better question. And so I would want people to answer these questions. Like, I don't have no statements for people, a whole lot of things. I just got a lot of questions. Like, what are you saying that, what do you think the harm is going to be? And what side of this issue are you on? Now, the only statements I would have on it is that, like I said in the beginning, the narrative of just good guys and bad guys, as far as white people and black people, white people being bad, that's not history. And so if you look at all of history, like, there are always white people that were fighting right alongside us in the civil rights movement. Celebrate that too, right? And so not stop being so, again, it's a bad narrative. It's a stupid narrative, and it causes people to make stupid thoughts. And so we just have to clear it up, because when history is misunderstood, then you have people offended for reasons where they don't have to be. But again, the whole end of it is, okay, whatever happened, happened. What's happening now, and 20 years from now, how are we going to look back on this moment? How are you going to look back on your role of what's happening right now? Were you working to make things better, or were you working to make things worse or keep things the way they are? And that's what we all have to ask ourselves every day. What side of every issue are we on? And are we making it better for people to thrive together, or are we separating things? And so, you know, that's my question. And people would want to contend that, well, talking about these things makes it harder for us to be together. Well, if you feel that way, why? Why is it that you feel like it makes it harder for you to be in a room with someone when they understand the issue? What if it really happened? Now, if we're making up lies, but if this really happened and it really tells how we got here, then why is it that we can't talk about it? What's the harm that you're so afraid of? And so make people explain themselves, and we can kind of uncover the hidden hurt or pain or whatever fear that is underlying some of these laws and the misunderstanding that are behind a lot of these laws and these thoughts.
You were tying so many good points together. Like, as you were talking, I was thinking about something that Kamaria said earlier, something you said even like 20 minutes ago. And I think, as I can say from personal experience as a white person for myself and white people that I am either friends or family with, when I learn new things about white history and what white people have done to people of color in the past and how oppression works, shame exists, but I think that the dominant emotion is actually anger and feeling activated. So it's kind of what Kamaria brought about earlier, is like learning and understanding what truly happened empowers people to then act. It empowers people to not be complicit in what is currently existing and, you know, continuing on the path of oppression and the status quo. So, and I think that there's a lot of people that do understand that, which is why I think you're saying, Marcus, that it's a bad narrative, because I do think that the people who are putting forth that narrative that white kids will feel sad, I think they know it's a lie. You know, I think that it's an easier narrative for them to spread, and for people who have not been educated on our real history to get on board with, because they want to protect their children and to, you know, just go ahead with this lie and not be educated and then not feel empowered to go against the people who are currently in power making these laws, right?
Exactly. Exactly. I definitely agree with that. It just goes back exactly to what Kamari was saying, how history can empower people to want to make change. And by coming up with this false narrative that white kids are going to be sad if we teach them the reality, it just allows them to derail from the actual argument. And I think, you know, the real question is, how are we already harming children by not teaching them their actual history and the real world that they're growing up in and the actual systems that they're going to have to live within? I think that's actually harming children right now. I think there's already a lot of harm that isn't even being discussed. So definitely agree.
And I was also thinking about the piece that you said, Marcus, about, you know, mentioning that there have always been white activists working towards liberation for everyone. And if we are taught, if we as white people get taught that as well, then we have historical figures to look up to. We don't just have historical figures to either be ashamed of or look down upon. We have people who we can say, someone's done this before me. There's always been people doing this before me. There have always been people on the right side of this issue. And they can be our role models, along with all the people of color who've been having to fight for themselves this whole time, you know?
Yeah. And honestly, this whole battle around critical race theory right now is history in itself. It's just a continuation of what's been happening forever. This like historical complacency of like our legal systems upholding white supremacy and just allowing that to continue to happen. I think it just proves the point even more. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You can almost see it as it's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, so this is slightly off subject, but right now, as we're talking, well, yesterday, I guess, right, probably right now too, they were doing the arguments about the redistricting battle. And it's so interesting to see people talk about gerrymandering from a legal, I just love your point, Alyssa, because from a legal standpoint, they're trying to say, well, you can't really say that gerrymandering exists, although we all know it exists, right? And like, it's happening. And so it's just funny how, like you said, the law and its interaction with reality, and somehow sometimes, and even our education system, sometimes we create systems that don't want to truly engage with reality. And that's, you know, and so there's this fiction that we kind of, that an institution can live, you know, through. And it's just amazing. So, yeah, we and so as history is being made right now, like you said, right now we're deciding if we're going to, what kind of legacy we're going to leave. What history is being decided right now as we're talking. So we don't get to run from history. We're in it.
I wasn't expecting to bring up redistricting, but that's a really good point, because we were all watching those arguments yesterday, and it 100% is intersecting with what we're talking about right now, because they're trying to decide if partisan gerrymandering is racial gerrymandering, because there is such a strong correlation between specifically Black voters voting Democratic and the fact that everybody knows that. And it's not something that you can pretend you don't know. But the other point that you brought up, Marcus, is so interesting, because watching the defendant of the current maps, his argument was just that this notion of fairness is too nebulous for anyone to understand or define. So we just can't. He's just like, so we just throw our hands up and we don't. And the fact that that can be someone's perspective, to just be like, who even can decide fairness? Nobody knows. It's barely a real concept. So we can't define it, and it's nobody's job. And so things just have to stay as is just maddening, because this old white man can say that because he's fine. Like, he can be fine with the fact that fairness isn't a thing that gets to be defined, because he'll always be great. And it's just wild that that was his argument, and that he probably sees no problem with, like, he probably has no deeper analysis into how messed up that is.
Yes, I love that point. I love how you bring that out. Yes, that was all day long I was talking about that he was just like, Who can know? Who can say? I was just like, what? Like, it's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we really realize, I won't say we, but in this conversation, but people are not aware of things that will change with redistricting. I was looking at my own voter registration a few months ago. I was like, wait a minute.
I lived in the 12th district, but overnight now I'm in the 9th. And I am not okay with that. We have a wonderful representative in Congress, and I am not sure. I just have a serious problem with people not being aware of their voter registration status, what their districts are. I realize it's not something that everybody wakes up thinking about, and this is the industry that we work in, but it's so important. You've got to be aware of who your representatives are, what are they saying when they go to Congress, when they go to the Senate, when they go to city council, state representatives, state Senate. You need to know, is this person really representing my community that I live in?
Really glad you brought that up, Kamaria, because you as an individual, so like you speaking as an individual voter, not someone who works for Dem NC, you live and have lived for decades in a historically Black community, and you were being represented by a Black woman in Congress who'd been reelected many times, and you've been there advocating with her. I'm sure you've sent her many messages about things that you need in your community, and she's, you know, whether she's delivered on them or not is personal opinion, but you probably have a longstanding relationship with your representative and you trust her because she represents you. And overnight, you being moved to a different district it's going to interrupt the way you've been represented in the past and how you'll be represented in the future, because you're going to be taken away from your representative. And that also takes power away from a Black woman incumbent to possibly be reelected again. If her communities are taken away from her, that was done purposefully. We know that your community was split out of her old district to take power away from her, to take voting power away from getting her reelected. And so we don't have to talk about her policy specifically. We know that is how gerrymandering disempowers specifically Black communities.
Absolutely. And so when you think about like the importance of Black history, and you know, what do we do with it, right? So, you know, that's always the thing, like, okay, so we have this thing, we have this month, we have this information. But what's most important is, you know, when you think about it, is what do we do with it? When we learn these facts, how does it move us in our present and in our future? How do we build upon what we know to be the case? And so as we've all been stating, you know, we're making history every day. So Black History Month is just history. And, you know, we celebrate it. We try to take this time to acknowledge it now. And so I think with that acknowledgement, it makes me reflect on, okay, so what am I doing with this knowledge? We talked about, you know, gerrymandering or whatever. Am I a person who is on one side of history or another? Am I a person that's fostering unity and that's helping, you know, all people to have their place in this country? Or am I someone that's doing the opposite? Am I working to make sure that these values that we espouse are actually real and that they're lived? Or am I, like, you know, taking them for granted? Or am I destroying these values? I mean, there are people that, I mean, it's possible to work against democracy right now. I mean, you know, it's possible to work against harmony right now. I mean, people are doing it. It's possible to work against racial unity right now. It's possible to do all these things, and there are people doing it. So then I'm asking myself, well, you know, as I look at our history, as I look at Black history and history in general, you know, where do I put myself in history? And when people look back on this day, you know, what would my place be? And I, you know, and so that's what this month urges us to do, is to stop and reflect, you know, not just where we are, but where we're going and where am I going?
Definitely. And not trying to make light of where we are in history right now, but when I first learned about the pushback of critical race theory, it reminded me of the book and film Fahrenheit 451. And they're just trying to make sure you don't gain knowledge. You don't want to know what really happened, what really is going on. And to me, this is just an example of just basically a current day Fahrenheit 451, because they don't want you to know. They don't want you to gain knowledge. And it's just a way of suppression. It really is. Let me keep you in this place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that is actually the end of our questions and a good place to honestly end, I think, with our conversation. But before we do close out, I wanted to ask you all if you have any final words that you want to leave with our listeners about Black History Month, no matter what that is, whether it's advice, just something you want them to know, something you want to say, anything at all.
Stay connected to the truth. Read. Please stay in touch with community, not just your own community, and learn. That's the only way you can grow and improve society.
I love that, Kamari. And I mean, and I'll just reiterate what we've been saying a long time, the whole time is, you know, Black history is history, is just American history, right? It's just our history. And our history is you. I mean, you are part of history right now. It's not something in the past. It's something that, you know, it's just the way we look at the past, but it's happening right now. So you're part of it. And so play, you know, your role in this in history is important. You know, every day that goes by is an important day. You're playing a role on how we go in the future. So you're part of history. So play a good part.
Absolutely. I think those were great words to leave with our listeners. Thank you both so much for joining us, Kamari and Marquez. Thank you for joining us to share your own experiences, to celebrate Black history, and yeah, to remind everyone to play their part as well. So thank you both so much for joining us today. I had a great time.
Thank you for having us. It's so great to be with the All-Stars.
Thanks for helping us create a North Carolina that's built by us, honoring Black excellence.
And thanks for listening to this podcast made of, by, and for the people.
Connect with us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at DemocracyNC. Or you can visit our website at democracync.org.